conduct ground manoeuvres in Gaza or face prison. They noted there are only a few soldiers left in their company who are capable of fighting. This is our time as parents to help them confront a system that does not care about them. The development comes at a time when the Israeli military is suffering manpower shortages. Recently, Israel's war minister Yoav Gallant said the Israeli army needs 10,000 new soldiers immediately. According to figures by the military, a total of 750 Israeli soldiers have been killed since October of last year, including 350 in the ground battles in the Gaza Strip itself. Earlier, Israeli media reported that the regime underreports fatalities among its soldiers as a means of avoiding public backlash and preserving the morale of its soldiers. Israel launched this Gaza onslaught after the Hamas resistance group carried out a surprise operation against the usurping entity in retaliation for Israel's atrocities against Palestinians, which went on for decades. However, more than 1 year into the onslaught, the Tel Aviv regime has failed to achieve any of its declared objectives in the Gaza Strip, despite massacring at least 43,000 Palestinians, many of them women and children, and injuring more than nearly 100,000 others. Recently, Israeli newspaper Maariv warned the Israeli military is on the verge of sinking in the mud in Gaza. The Israeli newspaper Maariv said, in these black months, 10 Israeli soldiers were killed in battles in Gaza and the north with Lebanon, and this is the price of a war of attrition. For months, mediators have been trying to reach an agreement between Israel and Hamas to ensure a prisoner exchange and a ceasefire and allow humanitarian aid to enter Gaza. But these efforts have been stalled because of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's refusal to meet Hamas's demand to stop the war.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
A special committee of the UN's Human Rights Office says Israel's war in Gaza is consistent with the characteristics of genocide. In its latest report, it pointed to mass civilian casualties and life-threatening conditions intentionally imposed by Israel on Palestinians since October 7 last year.
The developments in this report led this special committee to conclude that the policies and practices of Israel are consistent with the characteristics of genocide. The targeting of Palestinians as a group, the life-threatening conditions imposed on Palestinians in Gaza through warfare and restrictions on humanitarian aid resulting in physical destruction, increased miscarriages, and stillbirth are violations under international law. Civilians have been indiscriminately and disproportionately killed en masse in Gaza.
The UN committee criticized the regime for destroying vital water and sanitation systems, contaminating the environment, and inflicting long-term harm on future generations. The report highlighted that Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. This is consistent with findings from the UN's Famine Review Committee, which warns that famine may already be occurring in Gaza.
Already in October, nearly 133,000 people faced catastrophic food insecurity. And the integrated phase, food security phase classification released on 17th of October warned that under a reasonable worst-case scenario, a risk of famine existed for the whole of the Gaza Strip between November 2024 and April 2025.
The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees has raised urgent alarms about the looming threat of famine in northern Gaza, highlighting the severe humanitarian crisis that continues to unfold in the besieged strip.
Famine is imminent, if not already happening, in the besieged north. And while we receive testimonies from people on the ground asking, begging for pieces of bread, for water, the United Nations remains denied access to this area.
As the humanitarian crisis deepens in Gaza, the world continues to stay silent over the Israeli genocide. The need for immediate intervention has never been more pressing now as the lives of countless civilians hang in the balance amid U.S.-Israeli genocidal war.
With the spotlight on medical experiences in the occupied Palestine, the Fourth Congress on Trauma, held in Tehran, brought together a diverse group of medical professionals, including doctors, nurses, and researchers.
2 days Congress, including 18 sessions, in particular a special session regarding trauma in Gaza, and we would like to present our experience regarding trauma in the war.
The Iranian medical community has shown a genuine concern for the traumatic conditions faced by the people, physicians, and paramedics in Gaza, despite the fact that the international community has largely ignored the ongoing humanitarian crisis there.
Gaza has been the site of one of the largest conflicts, revealing a deeply traumatizing reality. We felt it was essential to honor the physicians and paramedics who sacrificed their lives on the battlefield.
Regarding the Israeli war on Gaza and Lebanon, I can say that we have international relations with doctors in both regions via teleconference. We will also discuss how trauma can be prevented and treated, particularly considering the daily trauma experienced by the oppressed children of Gaza.
As medical professionals dedicated to saving lives, we find it inconceivable. Explosives were discovered in tools and equipment. Pagers designed by the Israeli regime blinded hundreds of Lebanese.
Iranian hospitals have always been ready to help, and the healthcare assistance they offer this time is no different.
The injured brought to Iran after the pager blast received full coverage by the Iranian healthcare system. Appropriate actions were taken for them. Iranian hospitals treated over 500 injured Lebanese people.
In its genocidal war on Gaza and Lebanon, Israel has not spared even hospitals, leading to a tsunami of trauma among the people, medical professionals, paramedics, and most importantly, children. The Trauma Congress is an opportunity to discuss exactly that.
The ongoing conflict in Gaza has resulted in significant devastation to the healthcare infrastructure. Conferences like this, centered on Gaza's health conditions, can raise global awareness of the dire humanitarian crisis in the blockaded territory. Mehdi Nourouzi, Tehran.
The future of peace and human rights in West Asia is the theme of an international conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran, featuring diplomatic and scholarly guests from around the globe. This event addresses the ongoing developments in both the region and the world at large. Organized by an Iranian NGO dedicated to clarifying Iran's commitment to global peace, the conference aims to provide different perspectives regarding peace and human rights.
In response to media attacks and accusations against our country, we are organizing peace conferences through a non-governmental organization to highlight the Islamic Republic's commitment to peace.
The participants underscored that many international structures were created in the aftermath of World War II to address the needs of that era. But it is crucial for these frameworks to become adapted to contemporary realities. Additionally, the ongoing conflicts in Gaza and Lebanon were significant themes in the guests' presentations.
I stressed in my statement that regional issues should be solved by regional players, and peace should be sustained by the regional players, not by the external players.
Peace in West Asia is fragile. While some advocate for peace building through international law and institutions like the UN, Israel's violations of UN resolutions undermine the effectiveness of such approaches in the region.
The conference also offered speakers a platform to criticize the security arrangements in the West Asia region, expressing that they need significant reform. In this conference, Israel's presence in West Asia was identified as a major contributing factor to the ongoing instability and tensions, referred to as the main reason behind the current state of unrest in the region. Farzan Ashuryun, Tehran.
To some, France is standing idly by as Gaza and its population are destroyed by what many consider to be Israeli genocide. Tabiazi is a Palestinian refugee from Gaza.
What I want from the French government, and what I want from the French people and all of the world, just to give the Palestinians the same human rights. The Palestinians want to be free, just want to be has their freedom.
I want the French government to stop completely cut all ties with Israel. I want the French government to recognize Palestine. I want the French government to stop being hypocrites and actually play a role in making the change.
Harsh words calling for tough actions, which are unlikely to be taken up by the government here. As Israeli artillery continues to pound Gaza and parts of South Lebanon, France says it no longer supplies Israelis with the military equipment being used on those two fronts. A statement met with skepticism by some. The visit of the highly controversial Israeli minister Bezalel Smotrich for a private gala seems set to go ahead, as does a football match later this week between France and Israel.
While sports are often seen as a unifying factor, this match is now under scrutiny as a potential flashpoint of unrest and protest, especially given the current situation in Lebanon and Palestine. Peter Hume at the Stade de France near Paris.
Francesca Albanese, the high-profile UN Special Rapporteur on a tour of British universities, paying a short visit to supporters outside London's Queen Mary University ahead of a speech inside. We asked her what message she had brought to the UK.
The UK is in breach of its international law obligations. It's in good companies because many countries are not abiding by international law right now. Israel is committing a genocide. It's not only me saying that. It's hundreds of legal experts, historians, genocide scholars, including from Israel. There are 30 experts of the United Nations saying that. There is the International Court of Justice recognizing the plausibility of a genocide. Why the UK is still trading weapons with Israel?
As she headed to the venue of her lecture, she was confronted by an Israel supporter who was escorted away by police.
There are two protests taking place, one by a small pro-Israel crowd accusing the UN rapporteur of anti-Semitism, and another one by a pro-Palestinian crowd who say they consider Francesca Albanese as a hero and a champion for human rights.
Since her arrival in the UK, the attacks on Ms. Albanese from pro-Israel groups have been relentless but futile. As the UN Special Rapporteur, Albanese has spent years reminding the world of what international law says about the rights and responsibilities of the occupier and the occupied. Ahead of her visit to the UK, she published a report accusing Israel of committing genocide and apartheid. That drew the wrath of not just Israel, but its main backer, the United States, with outgoing Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield accusing Albanese of anti-Semitism and calling for her dismissal from the UN. Israel's smear campaigns against Albanese predate October 7th. Not one to be silenced, she's gone in the other direction, and by doing so, inspired more global Palestine solidarity. Saeed Porizap, London.
Iran's banking system connected to Russia's Mir payment network, signaling a new chapter in Tehran-Moscow relations. The announcement made in a ceremony held in the Iranian capital Tehran, attended by the governor of Iran's central bank and the ambassador to Russia. All in line with a common objective, boosting bilateral ties.
As a valuable neighbor, Russia offers great potential for strong transactions, particularly with our shared perspectives on regional and international events. This positive step can foster increased trade and transactions, and aligns with our goal to use national currencies and pursue de-dollarization, in line with other BRICS members.
According to the officials in charge, the project consists of three phases. The first phase enables Iranian citizens to use their bank cards to withdraw cash from Russian ATMs in rubles. In the second phase, Russian citizens will be able to do the same in Iran. And in the third phase, Russian stores will be linked to Iranian POS terminals, while ATMs in Russia equipped with NFC technology will accept bank cards from Iran's Shetab network. As Iran and Russia forge stronger financial ties, their connected banking systems pave the way for smoother trade and transactions, with ongoing negotiations for an alternative payments messaging service aimed to serve as a replacement for the SWIFT banking system. This comes after the agreement to link Russia's Mir payment network to Iran's Shetab banking system was finalized in St. Petersburg in July.
3 years ago, we introduced the notion of integrating Iran's card payment networks with those of other nations, circumventing Western-imposed sanctions. We are delighted that Russia has joined us in this endeavor, as a project initially projected to span a decade was accomplished in a mere year and a half.
Russia launched the Mir payment system in 2017 as an alternative to international financial services such as Visa and MasterCard. Farzan Ashuryun, Tehran.
These are the local Shia tribesmen from Pakistan's Kurram tribal region protesting against the closure of a key route connecting them with the rest of the country. It has been more than a month since this essential passage was blocked, isolating the Kurram tribal region with Panachinar at its heart. This has triggered a severe humanitarian crisis in the area near the border with Afghanistan. The closure of this essential passage following recent attacks by pro-Takfiri militant groups that had left over 50 Shia Muslims dead has isolated the district, leading to severe shortages of vital medical supplies and essential commodities, halted educational activities, and severely disrupted daily life.
We are in bad situation because the line order situation here has happened more than 2 weeks. The road is closed. The medicine shortage is on a first stage. I kindly request the government institution, please involve in this situation, give us solution, especially for medicine, because the health is more important than everything. The first thing is health.
The road closures and militant attacks have made life unbearable for us. My small shop, which once thrived by selling daily essentials, now stands half empty. Supplies haven't arrived for weeks, and prices for whatever little is available have shot up.
The Human Rights Commission of Pakistan has expressed serious concerns over the humanitarian crisis in Panachinar, urging the government to take immediate action to alleviate the suffering of residents.
The government of Pakistan, along with provincial authorities, must urgently reopen the roads to recover from the humanitarian situation in the region and deploy all available resources to prevent cross-border militant attacks from neighboring Afghanistan to maintain peace in Parachinar.
While assuring that the key route will be reopened soon, authorities have stated that the closure was necessary to prevent militant attacks as the violence was escalating into an ethnic and sectarian conflict.
Panachinar's history is marked by the infiltration of militants that have launched assaults on local Shia communities, resulting in widespread bloodshed. These conflicts have often led to road closures, isolating residents and intensifying their hardships. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of this speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a thousand of veterans and active members in the sacred defense and the resistance field. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 25, 2024. If the militia Zionist regime had been able to overcome the fighters either in Gaza or the West Bank or in Lebanon, if it had been able to defeat the fighters, it wouldn't have been forced to reveal its dark, hideous face to the world. It wouldn't have needed to carry out these crimes against homes, schools, hospitals, children, infants, and women. It hasn't been successful. Since it hasn't been able to overcome the resistance forces, it has no choice but to pretend to be victorious by targeting women, children, defenseless civilians, vehicles and roads, schools, and hospitals. So they have failed so far. Yes, they are inflicting damage. They have martyred a number of Hezbollah's influential, valuable members. Undoubtedly, this was a loss for Hezbollah. Nevertheless, this is not a loss that will bring Hezbollah to its knees. Hezbollah's organizational strengths and its powerful human resources are much greater than this. The power, capabilities, resilience far exceed any serious harm inflicted by these martyrdoms. Yes, of course, losing even one person, especially a commander with a history of fighting on the path of God, is a loss. There is no doubt about that. But up until today, the resistance have been victorious. And by God's grace, power and strength, the resistance front and Hezbollah front will be the ultimate victors in this battle.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The final point that I would like to address today is that our soldiers, our fighters, and our mujahideen sacrificed their lives so that the enemy's flags wouldn't be raised within our borders. They sacrificed themselves. Our brave, devoted young fighters left their families in mourning in order to prevent the enemy's flag from being raised in this country. The Iranian nation won't tolerate the raising of those same flags by infiltrators or those who are misled within the country. Those flags, which are the flags of cultural infiltration, the lifestyle of the enemy, and the hostile temptations of the enemy, must not be raised in our country or in our various institutions. We must be vigilant, and this is everyone's duty. The Ministry of Education must be vigilant. The state media and the press must be vigilant. And the ministries of science and health, which are responsible for educating our youth, must be vigilant. At that time, that is during the Iran-Iraq war, the enemy was defeated by our soldiers. We must not allow the defeated enemy to continue its activities in the country using various forms of deception and schemes. I hope Almighty God will keep all our officials, all our men and women, and all those active in various sectors fully alert in the face of the enemy's conspiracies. May God's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you for bringing me home.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. A UN special committee has described the Israeli war on Gaza as genocidal, expressing deep alarm over the humanitarian crisis there. The recent UN report was issued amid incessant attacks and unchecked violence by the Israeli regime, especially in northern Gaza, where a weeks-long siege and another major offensive have claimed thousands of lives.
A special committee of the UN's Human Rights Office says Israel's war in Gaza is consistent with the characteristics of genocide. In its latest report, it pointed to mass civilian casualties and life-threatening conditions intentionally imposed by Israel on Palestinians since October 7 last year.
The developments in this report led this special committee to conclude that the policies and practices of Israel are consistent with the characteristics of genocide. The targeting of Palestinians as a group, the life-threatening conditions imposed on Palestinians in Gaza through warfare and restrictions on humanitarian aid resulting in physical destruction, increased miscarriages, and stillbirth are violations under international law. Civilians have been indiscriminately and disproportionately killed en masse in Gaza.
The UN committee criticized the regime for destroying vital water and sanitation systems, contaminating the environment, and inflicting long-term harm on future generations. The report highlighted that Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. This is consistent with findings from the UN's Famine Review Committee, which warns that famine may already be occurring in Gaza.
Already in October, nearly 133,000 people faced catastrophic food insecurity. And the Integrated Food Security Phase classification released on 17th of October warned that under a reasonable worst-case scenario, a risk of famine existed for the whole of the Gaza Strip between November 2024 and April 2025.
The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees has raised urgent alarms about the looming threat of famine in northern Gaza, highlighting the severe humanitarian crisis that continues to unfold in the besieged strip.
Famine is imminent, if not already happening, in the besieged north. And while we receive testimonies from people on the ground asking, begging for pieces of bread, for water, the United Nations remains denied access to this area.
As the humanitarian crisis deepens in Gaza, the world continues to stay silent over the Israeli genocide. The need for immediate intervention has never been more pressing now as the lives of countless civilians hang in the balance amid U.S.-Israeli genocidal war.
Well, let's have a look at tonight's guests for this edition of Spotlight. We have human rights activist Mohsen Naqvi, who's joining us from Houston, Texas. And joining us from Belfast, we have journalist, activist, and director of Palestine Aid Belfast, Mr. Fra Hughes.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Naqvi in Houston. This recent UN Special Committee report has described the Israeli war on Gaza as genocidal, pointing to mass civilian casualties and life-threatening conditions that have intentionally been imposed by Israel on Palestinians since October 7th of last year. Break down this report for us, as by many accounts, nothing new is being revealed here.
Well, yes, I think... Nothing new is being revealed in this report, and not that the UN has been able to really practically do anything to end the genocide in Gaza and the war in Lebanon, but for the international community, and the UN does represent the international community, to keep reiterating that this is not just that this is genocide. And the committee really, the report by the UN committee goes into detail as to why it's a genocide, elaborating and really focusing on the fact that this is a deliberate attempt. And it is a deliberate attempt to starve the people of Gaza. It's a deliberate attempt to target innocent civilians. And not just that, but it is targeting a group of civilians, a certain particular group of civilians. This is how this war, this crime, this imposition of war on the Palestinians is being labeled and categorized as genocide. So the fact that they mentioned that there is starvation in Palestine goes on to show the effect that this war that has been imposed on the Palestinians has had. It has been catastrophic, meaning it has not only just that they are not focusing on just the military, the Zionist regime. As a matter of fact, not much harm has been caused to the military, but their main focus has been hospitals, as we saw in the past, has been schools, as we've seen in Lebanon. They are targeting buildings, residential buildings where people live. And we've seen the footages. We've seen how people have been devastated in this genocide. So this UN committee goes on to really elaborate on what those specific crimes are that leads to the categorization of this war to be labeled as a genocide.
Fra Hughes, the UN committee criticized the regime for destroying vital water and sanitation systems, contaminating the environment, inflicting long-term harm on future generations, and using starvation as a weapon of war. In that regard, the UN's Famine Review Committee warns that famine may already be occurring in Gaza. Where does Israel's claims of self-defense and fighting the resistance go hand in hand with starving innocent civilians and children in Gaza?
Well, their call for using self-defense is nothing but a propaganda tool which is used for Western audiences. This whole idea that they were attacked out of the blue on the 7th of October 2023, that they have the right to seek revenge, which is basically what they're doing on the people of Gaza, is nothing but a smokescreen in order to carry out the greater Israel plan. Now, you're talking about starvation as a weapon of war. There is an Israeli, I don't know if he is a soldier or a politician, who recently said in a public forum that the people in the north of Gaza could surrender or starve. Now, this is the official position of the Zionist, apartheid, racist, fascist state, which has its foothold in the Umma and in the Levant. I'd just like to call out people in the Levant who aren't actually coming to the aid of the people in Palestine and now in Lebanon. You have countries like Turkey, which are continuing to supply steel, which is used for armaments, tanks and weapons in Israel. You have a land border crosser going through, I believe, Saudi Arabia and through Jordan to supply by land articles and equipment and potentially munitions that cannot be docked at Israeli ports because of the Ansarallah army and the Yemeni civil society trying to prevent this continued genocide in Gaza and now further afield in Lebanon. You have both Jordan, a sovereign nation with a border on historic Palestine, and you have Egypt under Sisi, a man who was put in power under an American and, I believe, an Israeli coup when they ousted the democratically elected leader Morsi, put him in jail and subsequently let him die. So we have complicity across the Umma outside of the axis of resistance. And you're talking about starving people in Gaza. I have some personal information on this because as director of Palestine Aid, a registered charity in the north of Ireland, we have been able to supply 9,000 people in Gaza since March 2024 with over 110,000 meals sourcing that food on the ground. And we're hearing reports from our unpaid volunteers on the ground that children are starving in southern Gaza, that people are going without food several days consecutive days. So they're using starvation as a weapon of war. They're using starvation as subjugation. And if we all simply take off the blinkers, see what's happening on the ground, look at the reality, this is total war from a totalitarian regime that is using ethnic cleansing and genocide to end what they consider to be their Palestinian problem by ending the Palestinian people, much like the white Europeans in North America eradicated the indigenous population. This is what the white Europeans in Israel are doing to different members of the Umma in both Lebanon and in Gaza.
Right. Mr. Nahvi, the UNRWA chief said that Israel is only allowing maybe around 30 trucks of life-sustaining aid into Gaza daily. That's a ridiculously low number. UNRWA has also raised urgent alarms about the looming threat of famine in northern Gaza. Can you tell us what you think are the motives behind what Israel is doing to the north of Gaza for the past month or so?
Well, Gaza has been under siege. Gaza is being bombed, has been being bombed. Gaza is not only under siege, but Israel is actively blocking any kind of aid to enter into Gaza Also, medics are being specifically targeted, and there is an escalation of media censorship by social media companies here in the West as well. So not only is Israel besieging Gaza and ensuring that medical supplies or aid doesn't reach the people of Gaza, but it is also ensuring that that information is also not disseminated outside of Gaza, that the devastation that is happening in Gaza, it is being censored by social media now and also mainstream media. And so the Zionists are making sure and trying their best to oppress and suppress the Palestinians in every way possible. And this targeting of an indigenous population, which are the Palestinians in Palestine, amounts to genocide. The fact that they are using AI weapons that have the ability to target specific targets, that they are engineered in a way that they can focus on specific targets, and yet civilians are being massacred in Gaza. This is not self-defense. This is a clear case of genocide that the Zionists are committing, in spite of pressures and warnings by the international community, by the United Nations, and by the international courts of justices. The Zionist regime continues its bombardment and genocide on Gaza, and absolutely ignoring all resolutions of the UN, SE, and all impositions of by the international community on them. And this goes on to show that this arrogance that the Zionists are showing towards the international community, towards people of conscience throughout the world who have been coming out to protest, this shows that they are being supported by the U.S. empire. Without the support of the U.S. empire, it is not possible for a small country like a so-called occupied state like the Zionist regime, Israel, to be able to confront world leaders in the way that they have been confronting. So without the support of the U.S. empire, without the support of Germany, without the support of the U.K., the Zionist regime cannot contain so much pressure from the international world. The fact that they have been using bunker bombs on residential properties, that they are using their entire air force comprises of weaponry that has been given to them by the U.S. empire, sure, by Elbit systems. This goes on to show the complicity of the U.S. empire in this devastation and genocide.
Farah, he's following up what Mr. Nafi was just addressing. Are you appalled at the international community's failure to end the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza? Basically, the same is unfolding in Lebanon, too. Where does this leave the credibility of international bodies such as the UN, who have failed Palestinians and are now failing the Lebanese people as well?
I think what it shows is the false narrative that we've heard since the inauguration of the United Nations in 1948. The first thing they did was actually give credence and accept the state of Israel, which was self-declared at that time and then brought into the United Nations. So it's quite possible to say that from 1948, it has been nothing but a talking shop and a sham. It is there in order to prosecute African leaders, and it's there to, someone said recently, a member of, I think it was the ICC or the ICJ, that he was told by senior Western diplomats that the ICC was there purely to bring charges against black African leaders and Putin specifically, that that's what it was designed for, that's what it's there for. So it's a total sham. It needs to be replaced. Hopefully with BRICS going forward, there'll be an opportunity to set up either a shadow United Nations that has real input from its sovereign members, and that it has the international will to apply international force to end genocides like we're witnessing in Gaza. And if I just briefly, the Clintons are visiting Belfast yesterday, Hillary Clinton was due to give a talk at Queen's University Belfast, where she is the Vice Chancellor. And Joe Kennedy, an American pro-Zionist senator, was supposed to give a talk in the Mandela Hall. Hundreds of people with Palestinian flags, Palestinian scarves, turned up at the university in order to try and prevent these war criminal people with bloodstained hands. When we remember Hillary Clinton saying, we came, we saw, he died, talking about Gaddafi in Libya. The people in Belfast came out in huge numbers and prevented Hillary Clinton from speaking, and they prevented Joe Kennedy from speaking. And Bill Clinton is in Belfast tonight, supposedly at a £5,000 per table dinner in Belfast, which is the subject of a mass protest at 7:30 this evening.
Right. And Mr. Hughes, I'm going to stay with you for this one. If no action is being taken and there's no accountability for Israel's crimes and violations, won't this just happen again and again? And it could even set a precedent for similar massacres to take place in the future.
Okay, well, I'm not going to suggest we forget about what's happening now. Look what happened in 1948. The ethnic cleansing of the indigenous population of Palestine, where they murdered every man, woman, and child in the Deir Yassin village, which is beside the J1 corridor, which I visited many years ago. They then went on to the neighbouring villages and towns and told the people if they didn't leave, they'd be massacred. That's 1948. Not one Israeli at that time was brought before any war tribunal or charged with war crimes. It happened again in 67. It happened in 73. It happened in 82 in Beirut. It has happened all the way through Zionist, racist, fascist Israeli policy from before 1948 up to the present day. If no one was charged in the past, and every single general and leader and political figure in Israel has been a member of the IOF, has had potentially murdered people or called on others to murder people on their behalf, why do we think it's suddenly going to change in 2024? No one was held accountable then, no one's being held accountable now, and no one was held accountable for the Hiroshima bombs, the Nagasaki bombs, the bombing of Dresden by the British towards the end of the Second World War in 1944. None of them were held responsible, and many of the Nazis who should have been brought to Nuremberg and should have been put against the wall and executed were taken to America, and some of them were kept for the Gladio secret policy that the Europeans and the Americans brought in after the Second World War in order to destabilize the countries that had been liberated by the Russians during the Second World War. So there's no accountability. People are actually used as potential tools for the imperialist machinations throughout Europe and throughout the world. Whoever was in charge of, was it Bush in Iraq? That's an illegal war. And Blair, that's an illegal war. They should be in front of the Hague, and they're not.
Right. And Mr. Navi, how is the inaction of some Arab regimes in the face of the genocide of war on Gaza contributed to the continued massacre of the Palestinians? And now spreading to the attacks on the Lebanese as well?
Well, the inaction and silence of especially the neighboring Arab regimes is because of which the siege on Gaza continues. It is because of the inaction of these Arab regimes that the U.S. empire and the Zionists as well are able to use the military bases that they have in Jordan, that they've been able to use their skies to bombard the innocent people in Gaza, and to also retaliate against Hezbollah's attacks as well. And so it is these Arab neighbors that have empowered the Zionist regime, not just through inaction, but also through active, direct material support, as we've seen. But I'd also like to add what the committee has mentioned. They have mentioned, and I'm going to read this off of the committee. The UN Special Committee ends their report by saying that upholding international law, ensuring accountability for violations rests squarely on all member states. A failure to do so weakens the very core of international legal system and sets a dangerous precedent, allowing atrocities to go unchecked. So The Arab states, as you mentioned, are responsible, but also member states such as the UK, such as the US Empire, also have a responsibility towards their own people and towards international law, because these measures that international law, international courts have taken, are binding upon all member states. And Israel, being a member, it is binding upon them. And the inaction of the U.S. Empire, alongside the U.K., Germany, and other superpowers, this inaction is what has enabled the Zionists to be able to act without showing any regard to international law. And the power that they hold on these Arab governments, on these monarchies such as Saudi Arabia, fascist dictatorships such as Egypt, Jordan, the UAE, it is these countries that have empowered foreign militaries to have a hold on West Asia. Right now, we see a clear distinction, which is there is a group, which is the Axis of Resistance, that is fighting for the sovereignty of all Arabs, all Muslims, and all indigenous people of West Asia. And we see that the monarchies that are set in Saudi Arabia, in the UAE, in Jordan, we see these monarchies actively supporting and helping the U.S. Empire, the Zionist regime, and their militaries. Without their support, the Zionist, the U.S. Empire, they don't stand a chance on the land of West Asia.
Farahis, very briefly, if you may, what kind of an impact, because we're talking about the U.S.'s unequivocal support for Israel, what kind of an impact will a new administration have, given the fact that no matter all the differences that the two main political parties in America may have, they're always on the same page when it comes to their obedience towards the Zionist lobbies?
Yes, it remains to be seen what a Trump presidency will do when it comes to West Asia. He's already said he's going to end the war in Ukraine. He did stand on a platform in Michigan, one of the swing states, and he did say to the Palestinian and the Arab diaspora and the people that are that are born of the Islamic faith in that particular state that he would bring an end to the war in West Asia and Gaza. I can only hope that he will do what he said he will do. He has an opportunity to have a legacy, to be the president who brought an end to the war, because it won't be peace, because there'll never be peace so long as the Zionist state exists in order to divide the Ummah.
All right, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight's show. Thanks to human rights activist Mohsen Naqvi, joining us from Houston, Texas. Also to Farah Hughes, journalist, activist, and director of Palestine Aid Belfast, joining us from Belfast. And a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.